It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. No, strike that. It was just the worst of times. The battle for Brett Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is Scott Cosenza, your host, with Tim Donner, coming at you double-barrel Perazzi style or Beretta style. Tim is coming from the country of Italy, and that is his level of commitment to the podcast, and we thank him for it. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you. From in Firenze, Italy, otherwise known to the Anglophiles as Florence.
Wow! Now I'm so jealous that, I've seen some food pictures.
We sent you pictures of the food. Maybe that just makes the whole thing worse.
That's what I'm saying. I was saying that the that the pictures of the food is what makes me jealous. As I said before you left, the food alone is worth the trip over there. So, well, you know, events are so. Dynamic, I guess, is the word these days. You can't put a story to bed and expect it to remain to bed for more than a second here. So it is 2:24 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time on the East Coast, where I'm recording on 9/28/2018. Moments ago, the Judiciary Committee of the Supreme Court moved the Kavanaugh nomination through, and Jeff Flake kind of made a surprise announcement that he would do so, but he would be withholding. I think the gist of it was his vote on the approval of the nominee in the Senate as a whole with a 1 week, as long as he would withhold it until there was a 1 week period of time given for the FBI to investigate current claims of abuse, sexual abuse that are on the table now. I don't know. You know, who that all includes, meaning like he didn't specify, is it official complaints before the committee? And in any case, just for the record, the only person that can order or approve an FBI investigation is Donald J. Trump, because the FBI is an executive body. So that's where we stand. Do you agree with that recitation of the facts so far?
I do agree with the recitation of the facts, but the fact remains that Jeff Flake will hold out his vote if an FBI investigation is not done with a 1 week duration, whether it's Trump, and it is, of course, but whether it's Trump or anybody else who can command or order an FBI investigation, he's basically said he's not satisfied until there is a full investigation. And the question, of course, is whether he brings along Alisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, the senators from Alaska and Maine, respectively, whether they're a group, whether they are the three of them are going to have the same position. Because, Scott, as you know, those are the only votes that count. Every other vote is settled, with the possible exception of maybe one or two Democrats trying to curry favor with voters in red states. Manchin. That Trump won. Joe Manchin is one possibility. But Scott, at the same time, Joe Manchin is ahead by 8 to 10 points in his race. So I'm not sure that he needs to vote with the president on this one and vote for Kavanaugh. I guarantee you one thing, Scott, a Democrat will not be a deciding vote. In other words, they will only add on if they already know that the Republicans have the votes in their own caucus.
Not unless they want to be murdered by Chuck Schumer on the way to that vote.
Pretty much. I mean, they would be cast out of the party. They would probably be literally cast out of the party, any Democrat who cast the deciding vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh. That's not going to happen.
You know, so there's so many components here. It's sort of like, it's like, where do I... aim my arrow first in terms of what to talk about. I want to turn back to this FBI thing, because I think for a lot of people who are not politicos or, you know, super dialed in or attorneys, I think that it sounds like a reasonable ask from them. And that's one of the reasons why it's politically effective, I think, for them to do so. And for at least for the majority of the people asking for this, I don't believe that it's a genuine request for an investigation. I think it's just a delaying tactic and a smear tactic. And here's why. So what he says is, no way would Judge Kavanaugh, if he was an investigator, be okay with not interviewing a guy in the room. No way would he be okay with that. It's a farce. And that's why the FBI has to get involved, because and no reasonable person would say, let's not talk to the other guy in the room. All right, Tim, that is like, I think that's like fake news by White House. And I think it really gets to the point that I want to make here about this. White House acts like it's a given that there was such an event, and that he was there. Kavanaugh was there and Ford was there. Those things are all in dispute. And I would say to you, if I said to you, Tim, there was an incident in Los Angeles yesterday, and a man fitting your description did something horrible, and we want to get you, you know, we need to fly you to Los Angeles to testify, and you would say to me, well, I wasn't even in the United States of America. I wasn't in California. I wasn't in Los Angeles. I wasn't in California. I wasn't in the United States of America. Okay. Well, I don't need to say, well, how could we only hear from Tim that he wasn't in the country? I mean, he was in the room. Well, we haven't established that there was a room or that somebody was in the room. And it's sort of like...
This is a lack of specifics. I mean, it's an unspecified date at an unspecified location. It was, for the longest time, even an unspecified year in which it happened. And in the FBI investigation, Scott, you know, I'm going to pretty much echo what Brett Kavanaugh said during Thursday's hearing, where he scrupulously tried to avoid saying, I don't want an investigation. But what he said instead, and I think it's true, they're not going to learn anything that hasn't already been learned. And the Democrats know that. Jeff Flake is, you know, he goes out of his ways, much like his former and recently deceased colleague John McCain, in that he wants to be the maverick, the independent. Of course, that hasn't gone so well for him, because he dropped out of his reelection campaign in the face of dramatically fading poll numbers.
Yeah, in the face of likely defeat.
Yes, that's all it is. Precisely. Yeah. Precisely. So I don't know that we're going to learn anything more. I think what it does do is it gives the Democrats an opportunity, or let's not say the Democrats, because we can't prove there's a conspiracy here, but let's say it gives those on the left another week to gin up some kind of charges against Brett Kavanaugh, similar to the ones, the absurd charge that he participated in 10, up to 10 gang rapes from a woman who repeatedly attended parties where this was happening. So the question is begged, why did she keep going to parties where gang rapes were occurring?
So just to be clear what the allegation is, it's that Judge Kavanaugh was the principal or deputy organizer of multiple serial gang rape parties in and about the National Capital area, featuring as both victims and perpetrators the sons and daughters of the elite of Washington. That's literally the substance of her allegation, which is why so many Democrats are loath to get into the specifics, because it's so fantastic. And the reason why I think it's a great point that I would love to hear one of the Republicans bring up, why would you trust an FBI investigation that missed hundreds and hundreds of rapes?
Yes, exactly. If they failed to find that something that flagrant last time, then why would you trust them this time? It's all theatrics. It's Jeff Flake trying to posture and virtue signal that he's more serious than these political Republicans who are only out to mow through the opposition and get this done.
I have to say, I have a more charitable opinion of Mr. Flake's motives or whatever. Maybe it's just for some reason I like the guy. I don't know what to say about it, but He doesn't. I don't know. When I was looking at his face when he was talking this morning, he had a kind of a sincere. I believed him. I believe you, Senator Flake. I don't know what to say beyond that.
Scott, we got to have a talk.
By the way, the best.
We got to have a little talk.
All right, well, let's talk about senators who I don't believe for a second. I thought the best thing about the Flake thing was that it denied Cory Booker. You know, he thought he was going to be the big hero. You know, the big.
Well, Cory Booker actually was surprisingly effective for the most part. I was shocked because I think he's. What I say about Cory Booker is that he's a not ready for primetime player. I mean, I think he proved that with that embarrassing Spartacus stunt during the confirmation hearings.
Was there ever a case for Yale to abandon their affirmative action program?
Your words, not mine. But I thought he was reasonably effective in trying to use prosecutorial tactics to basically assert that Brett Kavanaugh actually drank on not just on weekends, but at least one weekday did drink.
Okay, Tim. So that to me is like the essence of I'm going to make you, you know, I'm going to try to get you ask a bunch of questions fast, and I'm going to try to trick you into something so that I can say, okay, we've established that point and move on. So it's
okay.
Like, oh, you're,
I'll
so
take
you're,
that as
so you're
I'll
weekday drink, you're a weekday drinker, right? You're a weekday drinker, yeah,
okay,
right?
Have so you ever drank on a weekday? I'm going to say that you're a weekday drinker, right?
And that is the exact opposite of this sober reflection and deliberative body that we're led to believe, right? That Mr. Booker wants to be a part of with his dream of being on the committee.
It's interesting, Scott, because the one hole that I thought that Democrats might be able to exploit would be based around, follow me here, that they might be able to exploit the idea that he was what we call a mean drunk, someone whose personality changes when they drink. And we've all known people like that. But that's would be based on the notion or on the decision by Judge Kavanaugh that he would quit drinking. But he obviously, with all the talk about beer, and by the way, beer manufacturers profited big time from this hearing because beer was mentioned constantly. Right, but now, the point now, is that, so that he's, but let me finish because the fact that he's still drinking and says, I still like beer and I enjoyed it then and I enjoyed it now, kind of put to rest the possibility that he was a guy who was a mean drunk whose personality literally changed when he had too much to drink.
I was cringing with that whole beer thing.
Well, Scott, there you go. I mean, the beer manufacturers, you'd almost think that some Democrat would accuse him of having been paid off by Budweiser in order to give that
testimony. I was cringing.
Testimony.
I mean, I really was cringing. Not the first time he said it or the second, but it just seemed like he kept going to the well there. And I was like,
isn't that the truth?
And it seemed it's inappropriate for the setting. I mean, look, just because. Look, I'm not suggesting that it makes him unqualified to be a Supreme Court justice or anything. I'm just saying I wish he didn't do it.
It's everything he did was so much of what Kavanaugh said was unprecedented because those of us who were over, say, 35 years old can remember the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill dust up in 1991. And even then, Clarence Thomas did not directly accuse Democrats of running a smear campaign against him. He made it more general that this was a high-tech lynching of a black man who dared to think for himself. It was sort of a general statement. This was, I mean, he even invoked Brett Kavanaugh, even invoked Hillary Clinton and directly targeted and stared down the Democrats on the committee. This was such a different Brett Kavanaugh than the one, the docile one that we saw on Martha McCallum on Fox News Network earlier in the week. He was defiant and angry and then extremely emotional. I've really never seen anything approaching Kavanaugh's performance on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I think it was ultimately effective.
What would you say to people who would say to you, Tim, that's exactly what it was, a performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's always possible, isn't it? But the problem is that he has so much testimony given by so many colleagues over such a long period of time, from high school to college to his professional career, and so many of them women, Scott. I think that's at one point I half expect. I mean, here's a guy who says that if he becomes a Supreme Court justice, he's going to hire all women.
Yeah, but here's the problem.
Clerks.
Actually, in fact, what he said was he already did hire them, meaning he offered contingent offers of employment.
Right.
Should he be elevated to the court, then they will, and they'll be the first all. But honestly, Tim, the people who are sort of the vehement anti-Kavanaughs would say that's just he just wants more inventory to harass or whatever,
or they might
turn it as a negative,
or they might say, Scott, they might go the other direction. And I was a little surprised that they didn't go this direction, but I think it was because of Kavanaugh's defiance and his angry tone. He put them back on their heels, but I'm surprised one of them didn't at least consider saying, well, maybe that's making up for all the damage you did to Ms. Blasey Ford and Deborah Ramirez and Julie Swett.
Guilty conscience.
Guilty conscience. I mean, I'm surprised that wasn't somehow implied or raised directly by Democrats. But again, I think it's because they were back on their heels. Mm-hmm. I think none of them were expecting a Brett Kavanaugh to come out like a raging bull.
Let's, Tim, talk for a second about Ms. Ford. What was your impression of her?
I think it's impossible to have watched that and not believe that this woman has been deeply traumatized. And I saw her testimony as sad. I thought it was compelling. It's clear that she has been the victim of a very serious event. Look, Scott, I kind of look at the actual facts on the ground. She put two front doors in her house. Have you ever known anybody who's done that? It's impossible, really, I think, to dismiss this as some figment of her imagination.
Now, Tim, I used to listen to a big-time radio show called Loveline with Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla. And one of the things that Dr. Drew would always say is when older adult women, have that little girl voice, it's often indicative of childhood sexual trauma. And that's what I couldn't help by hearing her. And she just seemed, I'll tell you what, the best, she just had a little bit of that West Coast affect too. A little flustered for the committee, but she had that thing that, yeah, I agree with you. The point of all that was to say, yes, Tim, I 100% agree with you. Whether she was victimized by Judge Kavanaugh or not, who knows? But she seems clearly to have been victimized by somebody. She seemed quite sincere in her testimony.
I don't think they were able to impeach her much, if at all. I think they focused on three things, which I consider relatively inconsequential. One of them was the number of people that were at the party. She said at one occasion that there was four others, and then she said there were two boys and four other girls. I didn't find that particularly compelling. It was interesting how she said she has a fear of flying, and then the questioner for the Republicans pointed to several instances where she voluntarily flied for vacations and stuff like that. And the third thing was the funding of the polygraph test, where they tried to make an issue of the fact that she didn't pay for it. I don't think they laid a glove on her that way. And I think it was ultimately a good decision to have that woman who's a sexual assault specialist do the questioning, because it would have been unseemly to have all these white men questioning this victim of sexual assault.
Let me interrupt here with an exquisitely worded sentence. The absence of a negative, however, is hard to quantify, and not having this group of older white men say something wildly or mildly insensitive to the sympathetic Ford is surely worth its weight in political gold. That's from my piece, Tears of Sadness, Tears of Rage on LibertyNation.com.
I agree. I did think she acted overly naive about lawyers. And she said, well, I wouldn't know that I have to go get a lawyer to do this. I mean, this is a woman with a PhD who's teaching at major universities in California.
I think that was sort of late on the process, if not Ford herself, How did you get your lawyer? Oh, she was recommended by Senator Feinstein. So, like, what little was learned was that it's even more political than we thought, to me, the backstory.
Well, I think that the Democrats really misplayed this dramatically, Scott, because if they had quietly investigated this letter that was in their possession on July 30th, and they'd quietly done an investigation and informed the Republican majority of this accusation and had an FBI investigation of it then, and then if it resulted in anything, bring it forward, it would look like it was part of a legitimate process. The problem was that they brought it up at the last minute, which meant that this event may have occurred, but it became secondary to the idea of how the Democrats played this strictly for political advantage, made them look really bad. And then, frankly, I think the Deborah Ramirez and Julie Swetnick accusations actually made the Democrats look worse.
Oh, definitely.
It made Blasey Ford look worse because she looked like she was now just one of a string of women who were going to do anything they could to try and deep six the Kavanaugh nomination.
Yeah. Tim, in 2011, you called me and said, I'm running for the U.S. Senate, come and help. And I did. If you were a member of the U.S. Senate in 2018, you sound like you're pretty much on the board with Kavanaugh. Any trepidation or you're just a firm yes?
Well,
what does Senator Donner do?
Senator Donner would say that in the United States of America, what we do is make a presumption of innocence until guilt is proven. It's the foundation. It's the bedrock of our whole legal system. And even nations such as England work in the reverse. They have a presumption of guilt until innocence is proven. So no matter how compelling the testimony was from Christine Blasey Ford, there's a compulsion to have to prove what the accusation is in fact true. And the way you do that is through evidence. There's no evidence. The people at the party refused to confirm that they even went to the party. Her friend said she doesn't even know Brett Kavanaugh. Blasey Ford does not know the date, the place, the time, where it all occurred. And in this country, even if you've got the truth behind you, if you cannot prove it in a court of law, then you're not going to win the case. And I think that's ultimately what's going to happen here, is that she's made a compelling case, but she cannot prove it. And if she can't prove it, it is not enough to block the confirmation of a man who is, by all accounts, highly qualified, one of the most highly qualified jurists ever to be nominated to the Supreme Court, a man who has over 300 decisions under his belt at the second most important court in the land. I got to be a windbag, Scott. That's part of being a senator. Come on.
You're well qualified in so many areas to be a senator, including that one. Let me say this. All right.
Thank you so much.
If I had the capacity to do so, what I would try to do is fashion some sort of deal I don't believe that they would go for it, but just for the sake of the fantasy of it, I would fashion a deal where I would say to Klobuchar, Manchin, whoever else I could get on board, and I would say, all right, look, I'll agree to a 1 week delay in the proceedings for an investigation if we can lay out ahead of time what will constitute disqualifying events or not. And then you agree that if it comes back without anything, that you'll vote yes on the nomination.
Right. Well, he's never going to get that deal.
Yes.
He'll never get that deal, but he might pick off some of those red state Democrats who are up this year. But Scott, there's so many times where we figured, okay, this is where this is going, and we know how this is going to end. But, with another week added to the calendar for this nomination, so many things could happen in a week, including additional accusations that would mount up. Then that's right. Four, oh, yeah, then it's five.
You'd have to put the caveat in there that no more. It becomes a farce. Agreed. Okay. We're going to wrap it up here. Any predictions that you want to announce very briefly about the process or anything at 12:54 p.m. Eastern Standard Daylight Time, Eastern Daylight Savings Time?
I do think he's going to be confirmed.
Okay. I predict that when Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies, if Donald Trump is president of the United States, there will be blood in the streets of this country. That's what I've learned through this process, that that's
Scott,
where we are.
There was a song that I used to listen to when I was growing up in the 1960s by Barry McGuire, and it was called "Don't You Know We're on the Eve of Destruction." And if Ruth Bader Ginsburg or one of the other progressive justices dies and Donald Trump has the opportunity to turn the court far to the right or towards the constitutional direction for a generation or more beyond what a Kavanaugh would add to the court, we would be, I believe, on the eve of destruction, because what they would do then, if they do that for this nomination, which only moves the court, you know, definitely, but not dramatically in the constitutional direction, a 6-3 conservative majority would shut out the left for a generation.
From the country of Italy, Tim Donner, thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening.
Buongiorno to all.
Buonasera. It's depending on when you listen. You know what I mean? It's for everybody.
Or buonanotte.
Or arrivederla, if I can break out the formal. All right?
Very nice.
Rolling the R's like a boss. This is The Uprising. Thanks for listening. Ciao.